morning. Today's daf and sota is Lamed Dalet. Thank you to the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is only Zechun Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We are on Lamed Gimel Mid Beis. We're about two thirds of the way down, and a continuation discussion of Har Griz and Har Evel. After 40 years traveling in the Midbar, we're going to go over the Yarden, and after crossing over the Yarden, so we're going to go through a bris, a covenant that's made between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not the first covenant that we make, but a covenant upon entering into Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be on two mountains. One is Har Grizim, and the other one is Har Eval, upon which we half the Jewish people are going to be standing. Approximately half the Jewish people are going to be standing on one mountain, half on the other. The Jewish people are going to be standing on another mountain, divided into six tribes for each mountain. You're going to have Kohanim, Levim, and the Aron situated in the middle. And then we're going to go through the brachos and klalos that are mentioned at the end of the Sefer Torah. And with a response to every bracha, amen, by everybody, and a response of every klalos, amen. And we go through that procedure. And these are this is the bris of a Har Grizim and a Har Eval. So the reason why it comes up now in Masechta Sota is because as we began the seventh parak of the Masechta, so the Mishnayos went through those things that could be said b'chol lashon. The Mishnah gave us a list of seven things that could be said b'chol lashon, and then the Mishnah gave us a list of things that have to be said b'lashon hakodesh. One of the things that needs to be said b'lashon hakodesh is the brachos and klalos at Har Grizim and Har Eval. Already noted that unusual in that the Har Grizim and Har Eval is an historical event, meaning that it's not a mitzvah l'dori doros, it's not a mitzvah for all generations. Although I could be wrong about that assumption, but that's just a general assumption I have. But nevertheless, the Mishnah says that those are the things that can be done only b'lashon hakodesh. And the Mishnah also gives a lot of detail regarding Har Grizim and Har Eval, meaning that if it's a historical event, we're spending so much time in the Mishnah, but yet the Mishnah spends a lot of time discussing it. And as much as the Mishnah discusses it, the Gemara spends even more time discussing it. So we're going to be seeing over the course of today's daf, Lamed Dalet, tomorrow's daf, we're going to keep coming back to Har Grizim, Har Eval, and we're going to learn a lot of information. We're going to learn a lot of information, and we're going to see that some things are not, some things are subject to a debate. Notably, what's subject to a debate is the location of Har Grizim, Har Eval. So this is where we started yesterday, and this is where we're going to continue today, and that is the discussion of where exactly Har Grizim and Har Eval is geographically. Where exactly is it geographically? One of those machlokesos that occur in the Gemara that's just in general hard to understand. Many of the machlokes and lamdas based around analysis easier to understand, easier to compute. In other words, you're just looking at the same thing but from different perspectives, and the analysis will come out differently. However, we're talking about geography. We're talking about where is Har Grizim and Har Eval. It's one of those things which you did not think would be open for a debate. It is open for a debate. Machlokes Tanaim, where exactly the location of Har Grizim and Har Eval is. So first we saw yesterday the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, in the Braisa. This is all Braisa. This discussion comes strictly from the Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda the Braisa says that Har Grizim and Har Eval is situated next to the city of Shechem. You cross the Yarden. It's not directly over the Yarden. You're going to have to go a little bit inbound into the land of Eretz Yisrael. You get to the city of Shechem, which is right by Elonem Moreh. And there you're going to find the mountains Har Grizim, Har Eval. The Gemara says historically, it's where nowadays, and I say nowadays, I mean I'm speaking from the perspective of when the Braisa was written, circa 2,000 years ago. It's where nowadays you're going to find the Shomronim, or what also known as the Kutim. So where you find Kutim nowadays, meaning in the Shomron, Har Grizim, Har Eval, which for them, by the way, that's their religious center point. That's the epicenter religious point of the Shomronim, of the Kusim. So that's where Har Grizim and Har Eval is going to be geographically situated. Okay, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's what we saw yesterday. And one other point, just to review from yesterday. So the Kusim themselves. So just a quick history lesson. How did the Kusim get into Eretz Yisrael? So they were the replacement of the Asaras HaShvatim, meaning when Sancheriv came in during Bais Rishon, during the first temple, approximately 150 years before the Chorban Bais Rishon, and he decimated the 10 northern tribes. So he drove the 10 northern tribes out. Where are they? Okay, good question. That's been a mystery for some time now. So he drove the 10 northern tribes out, and he replaced them with people from the land of Cusa. And from that point forward, they were known to us as the Cusim. Cusa is Bavel, basically. It's in other words, he took a people from Iraq, from the town, from a land land of Cusa, brought them into the northern section of Eretz Yisrael, and they made residence. And at first they kept practicing their Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, but eventually they got around to the idea that Eretz Yisrael doesn't tolerate Avodah Zarah so much. The Navi describes how they kept getting attacked by lions, and because of the practice of Avodah Zarah, so they converted. Good conversion, bad conversion. As we all know, that's a major machlokus that occurs historically throughout Shas. Right? Tanaim argue it, Amoraim argue it, whether or not the conversion was a good conversion or not. In the meantime, however, one thing we definitively say about the Kusim, and that is, they're followers of Torah Shebichsav. They're not so into. They're not much into Torah Shebaal Peh. And one of the things they had to do in order to supplement the information given the Torah Shebichsav is they had to add words. Otherwise, without Torah Shebaal Peh, certain things would just simply escape us because we need Torah Shebaal Peh. In other words, it is the parish of the Torah Shebichsav. They didn't have Torah Shebaal Peh. They didn't buy into Torah Shebaal Peh. So therefore, what they had to do is they had to add words. So for example, the Gemara said yesterday, when it came to the identification of where Har Gerizim and Har Eval was, they actually inserted the word Shechem into their Torah. So they had a Sefer Torah, our Sefer Torah, but because they didn't buy into Torah Shebaal Peh, they had to actually write the word Shechem by Har Gerizim and Har Eval so that it would identify where it is. To which the Tanaim pointed out yesterday. Now you know it's how can you accept the Sefer Torah of the Kusim when they're just simply adding words into the Torah? And the reason why they're adding words is because they don't buy into Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay. All this we saw yesterday. In the meantime, so far, what are we reviewing? Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, which is that that the Har Gerizim and Har Eval is Evali Yarden, but next to the city of Shechem, which means that it's not exactly right over the Jordan River. We are now up to the next Shita. We are up to Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar Amar. Okay, in the Gemara in Lama Gimel Amud Beis, it is more than halfway down on the Amud. It is, the first one in the line is Limadatem, or Limadatum. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Elazar Amar, Halo Hema Be'ever HaYarden, Samach LeYarden. So in terms of the identification of where Har Gerizim and Har Eval is, so he's going to disagree. It is not inbound in Eretz Yisrael, but it's right over the Jordan River. Meaning they're coming from the east side of the Jordan River, they're crossing the Jordan River, but it's directly on the west bank of the Jordan River. So, Samach LeYarden. So, in fact, the Torah describes that it's Ba'avrachem HaSeyardim. When you cross over the Jordan River, that's it. That's where Har Gerizim and Har Eval is going to be. So in other words, it's not, according to Rebbe Elazar, it's not in Shechem, but directly over the Jordan River. Achrei Derech Mavo HaShemesh, Makom She'acham HaShokas Ba'aretz. Now, when the Torah describes that it is Derech Mavo HaShemesh, so unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who we saw yesterday, understood that to mean the rising eastern sun, so according to Rabbi Elazar, just the opposite, the setting western sun. It's far away from the setting western sun, meaning it's all the way to the east. Meaning just west of the Jordan River, all the way on the east side of the border of Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Chivi, Shachamach Shokas, period. Okay, so what do we have right now? A simple machlokus, although difficult to understand, a simple machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar, where Har Gerizim and Har Eval was. Okay, could be, I'm speculating now, so just put that all under the heading of I'm speculating. It could be that there were more than one area in Eretz Yisrael referred to as Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and it could be that the machlok is just rooted in which one. But again, I don't know that to be so. Outside of that, it is hard to understand how there could be a debate of where Har Gerizim and Har Eval was, but there is a debate. Machlok is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Elazar. Now, a couple of things are difficult for Rabbi Yehuda. And the Gemara now is going to note the difficult position Rabbi Yehuda, even though on one hand his position is probably the easiest to support and defend because he actually is referring to the mountains known more popularly as Har Gerizim and Har Eval. B, they were actually mountains. And, okay, his position is kind of more defensible, but the Gemara points out, Eretz Kaneni, Eretz Chavihi. First of all, the fact that the Torah describes Har Gerizim and Har Eval in Eretz Kanani for Rabbi Yehuda, that's imprecise, because really it's an Eretz Chivi. Now we know that Canaan was divided really into seven nations, the seven nations of Canaan. So Canaan is a general term that we use to describe the entirety of it, but when all said and done, it's really subdivided into seven different nations. Furthermore, the area of Shechem that Rav Yehuda describes as being Har Gerizim Har Eval, that was really the area known as, that was attributed to the Chivi. And so why doesn't the Torah describe it as Chivi? Furthermore, it's the Torah describes it as Ba'arava, in the plains. It's not in the plains, according to Rav Yehuda. It's actually in a mountainous area. Meaning, according to Rav Yehuda, it's next to Shechem, which is a mountainous area, where there are actual mountains over there. Why would the Torah describe it as a plain? Yoshev Ba'arava. And Hein Yoshev Mula Gilgal V'alo Ra'osa Gilgal. Furthermore, according to Rav Yehuda, another difficulty, in that the Torah describes as Mul HaGilgal. Gilgal is right over the Jordan River. Meaning, according to Rabbi Lazar, that's perfect. That's exactly where he situates Har Gerizim and Har Eval. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, where it's up by Shechem, which is, again, inbound of Eretz Yisrael, and it's not near Gilgal at all. So why would the Torah describe it as Mul HaGilgal? So, all this serves as difficulties for the opinion of Yehuda. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yaakov, Omer, Lebakasav, Ella Harsam, Derech Bishniya, Kederech Shara, Lahem Berishona. So the Gemara's answer to that is that these psukim over here are not talking about the destination, it's talking about how to get to the destination. You take a look at Rashi. Kederech Shara, Lahem Berishona. Rashi, two lines before the lines get wide. Rashi writes, B'tseisam im Mitzrayim ba'amud anan lahan chosam haderech. So we know that when they went through the Midbar, so they had a guide. So they had the clouds that showed them the way. So the Torah at this point in time is just telling us that, look, Moshe is going to die, and we no longer have a guide. Because once Moshe dies, there's no longer clouds. So we're going to go in Eretz Yisrael, and we're not going to have GPS. So what the Torah now is describing, this is the defense of Rav Yehuda, is the Torah's not telling us where to go, the Torah's telling us how to get there, meaning directions. These are all how to get there. Go down the flats. Go in inhabited areas. Go along the Eretz Kanani, Shiarava. When you cross the Jordan River, don't hug the river. Derech Eretz Achivi, don't walk through the Eretz Chivi. Shiharim Ugvaos, Ela Yichantel Estochem, Mitzad Ma'arav, Rachog Mene Yarden, V'yakifu V'yichbashu. So, and without me showing you a map, because I'm not sure if it would really help, but basically take a flat, inhabited path to get to Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and don't take the mountainous range path. That's what the Torah is describing, and that's the way to understand the Pesukim according to Rabbi Yehuda.
Now, I learned that by doing that, they are not afraid. They don't have to hide. So
okay. Good, good. Okay, good. Very good. So, continuing now in the Gemara, I'm sorry. So that was all the defense, Derek, but Derek, I'm sorry. So I read in Rashi, I didn't read in the Gemara. Okay, so, okay, back to the Gemara. So Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Lo Bakas, Velo Haruslam, Derek, to show the way, Bishnek, Derek, Shara, Lam, Rishona. Derek, Kederek, Lechuv, Velo Basad, Sakramim. You got to go on the road. Don't go through fields. Don't go through vineyards. Hayoshev, Be Yishuv, Lechuv, Velo Bimid Baros. Go through inhabited areas. Don't go through desert. Ba'arava, Ba'arava, Lechuv, Velo Bahar Mugvaros. And go through plains. Do not go over the mountainous range. Okay, that's our defense of Rabbi Yehuda. So again, we're not talking about where to the destination. We're talking about how to get to that destination. It's like the Torah is giving us a roadmap once we cross over the Yarden, as Rashi explains, because we no longer have the Harim. Sorry, we no longer have the Ananim, and so we need a roadmap. Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, we're going to now start another braisa. This is a Tosefta, eighth perek. I know that because I'm reading on the slide. The eighth perek of the Tosefta, where once again we're going to spend a lot of time in today's shiur, today's daf, going over details of the crossing of the Yardim and the Har Grizim and Har Eival. Tana Rabbanan Ketzar Avi Yisrael the Yardim. So first we're talking about the crossing of the Yardim. So after 40 years in the Midbar, after the death of Moshe, Yehoshua now is taking the Jewish people and crossing over the Yardim. So Bechol Yom Aranos, so one notable difference. While traveling through the desert for 40 years, so the Aron was situated in the middle, meaning you had two degalim. Now degalim literally means flags, but I'm sure we all know, the beginning of Parshas Sefer by Midbar, the Torah describes, basically there was four separate encampments surrounding the Aron, right? North, south, east, west, covering all sides. And so, generally speaking, when marching, so there's a general machlokus in terms of how they march. Did they march like they encamped, or did they form a some sort of line? That's in general machlokus. But aside from that, where did the Aron go? Always in the center. When traveling in the Midbar, the Aron always went to the center. And now, as they're crossing the Yardin, so the first notable difference that the Braisa points out is that the Aron went in the front. Shenamar, and we have a pasuk in Yehoshua, third parak of Yehoshua. Hine Aron Abris Adon Kola Aretz Over Lifnei Chem. I'm sorry, Over Lifnei Chem. Period. Okay, so that is notable difference number one. Aaron was in the front. Two. Bechol yom vayom nosim es Aaron vayom nasu kohan. I'm sorry. Bechol yom vayom levim nosim es Aaron vayom nasu kohanim. Every single time the levim carried the Aaron, and today, meaning at the crossing of the Yordan, it was the kohanim who carried the Aaron. Shenamar.
How much else is carried?
Wait just a second. Vayaka Noach Kapos Raglea Kohanim Nosea Aron Hashem Vegomer. So once again, just quoting from the third parak of Yehoshua, an indication that the Kohanim carried the Aron. Now the word Tanya over here could strike it because it's all continuation of the Tosefta. Rabbi Yossi Omer B'Shloshim Mekamos Nasu Kohanim Es Aron, and this happened on three occasions, meaning that generally speaking, the Levim carried the Aron. But on three occasions, the Kohanim carried the Aron. Number one, Kishavrus the Yarden, right here, meaning our topic of discussion. It's the one time when the Kohanim carried the Aron. Two, Kishesibos Yericho, when we went around Yericho seven times. So every time we went around the Yericho, the Aron was carried. Who was the Aron carried by? So once again, the Kohanim. Three, Kishechzirulam Kamo. And finally, after Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, the Aron now is going to be returned to the Beis HaMikdash after kind of being, the Aron was kind of like in Galus, so to say, and so finally it was returned, and when returned to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so who carried it? The Kohanim. So on these three occasions, and it sounds like from the Gemara, only these three occasions, the Kohanim were the ones responsible for carrying the Aron. Just to fill in some information, that last Rashi is packed with information. Kishichzir lim kama, Rashi writes, B'mei shalom lebeis Kodesh HaKadoshim, dechziv, v'yevo kol zignei yisrael v'yisu kohanim es Aron. So first of all, the Pasuk, in the beginning of Sefer Malachim, 8th parak of Sefer Malachim, description of the inauguration of the first Beis HaMikdash and the Aron being returned, the Aron being carried by the Kohanim. During the days of Eli, so the Aron was sent into exile. Because we know that when the went into Eretz Yisrael, so again, 14 years, there was a temporary Mishkan in Gilgal. Then, the next 369 years, they took the Mishkan from the Midbar, and they situated in Shiloh, and Shiloh became the Beis HaMikdash for the next almost four centuries. So now, during the days of Eli, where there was still a Mishkan in Shiloh, so the Aron was taken. Now it was returned. The problem was is that when it was returned, there was no Mishkan in Shiloh. So it was for a temporary time, placed in the house of Avinadab. Then David transferred it from the house of Avinadab after 20 years to Oved Edom. And then it was taken to Ir David. And then Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash, and then finally And Rashi goes on to describe the dimensions, but finally, after some time in exile, it was returned to the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
So during those years, man, it was somebody's house, and how did they do like this Yom Kippur service? Like, they cut?
Good. I don't know. Just one end note to this part of the Gemara, and that is the Rambam is a very interesting shita, and that is that the Rambam's opinion is that, principally speaking, who should be carrying the Aron? The Kohanim. The Rambam points out in the Midbar we saw that the Kohanim didn't carry them. The Levim carried in the Midbar. So the Rambam says, yeah, you know why? Because there weren't that many Kohanim, right? Total number of Kohanim in the Midbar. I mean, there was as many as five. Then the number got cut down to three. I understand that Pinchas already was the third generation. You know, and you'd imagine there's more in the third generation, but there's simply put, there weren't enough Kohanim in the Midbar to carry the Arun. So in the Midbar, so the Levim were given the responsibility, but the Rambam writes that, principally speaking, the Kohanim's responsibility to carry the Arun. What's difficult for the Rambam, and this is an old question on the Rambam, is the Gemara we just learned together. Because the Gemara we just learned together sounds like that there were only three occasions, then only three occasions where the Kohanim carried the Aron. So anyway, so obviously one would need to defend the Rambam. I don't have one off the top of my head, but okay, just an end note to this point. Okay, we're in the middle of a very long Tosefta, a long Braisa, where we are discussing the crossing of the Yarden, the Jewish people after 40 years in the desert, for the first time entering into Eretz Yisrael as a nation, crossing over the Yarden, and now we're giving a detailed description of the crossing of the Yarden. We are in the very top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. We're continuing in the Braisa. V'kevan shenid balu raglei kohanim b'mayim. Now, once the feet of the Kohanim, remember, we have the picture? It is the Kohanim carrying the Aron. First, they're leading the Jewish people, and the moment that their feet are situated in the Jordan River, meaning, as Rashi points out, on the east bank of the Jordan River, so the water stopped, meaning the Jordan River is flowing in the southbound direction, and the water stopped. Now, when they said the water stopped, it meant that there was still water flowing, but basically it kept accumulating at that point, and it wouldn't flow anymore. So, Neid Echad. So once again, just quoting Pesukim from the third paragraph of Sefer Yoshua. So it went up, it kept steeping up into one column. The Kama Govan Shalmayim. Now, how high was the column? Shnei Masamil. So it was 12 mil high. Keneged Machane Yisrael Divrei Rav Yehuda. Now, according to Rav Yehuda, it went up 12 mil high because that was the length of the Jewish people in transit. While the Jewish people are traveling, so the entire area, linear area of the Jewish people is 12 mil by 12 mil. And again, this position presupposes that they walk as they encamp. Their encampment was 12 mil by 12 mil, and they walked in the same formation, although we already noted that the formation has already broken a little bit because the Aron goes into the front. But still, according to Rav Yehuda, they're going to be crossing the Yarden in formation, and therefore the water only went 12 mil in the air, to allow for the total length of the Jewish people to go 12 mil. So Amalo Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon Dvarach Adam Kalam Mayim Kalam. So Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon says, yeah, but the math doesn't work out, because you're assuming that the rate of the Jewish people crossing the river is going to be the same rate of the flow of water, meaning the water stops so that the Jewish people can pass, and you're assuming that the Jewish people can travel as fast as the water. And if that's true, so then the water only would need to go up 12 mil high to allow the entire Jewish people to go. But Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon says to Rebbe Yehuda, what do you think is faster? People walking or the flow of the river? Now, just the little I know about rivers, right? Southeast section of this country. That's all I know about rivers. But it depends. Sometimes the rate of a river is a variable. But anyway, but According to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, how can you tell me that the people are traveling faster than the river? He thinks it's a no-brainer, the water's faster. So if we only allow the water to back up 12 mil high, so that's not enough time for all the Jewish people to pass over. So according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, I'm going to stay with the assumption. I mean, again, the Pasuk in the Navi says Nade. It was a column. The only issue now up for deliberation is how high. I'm telling you, says Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, it went really high, much higher. It had to, because otherwise there's just simply not time allowed for the Jewish people to cross. Yes, the Mishosh Meos Mil, 300 mil in the air. Just to give us some sort of idea, right? Every mil is 2,000 amos, so 300 times 2,000 amos is.
600,000.
Six, right, how many zeros?
600,000.
600,000 amas. An ama is, let's just say two, it's 2 feet. So it's 1.2 million feet in the air. Okay. Now, that's obviously that's very high. Now, in terms of, okay, in other words, the point he's making is, It went extraordinarily high. In fact, that was part of the point. Part of the point is that it went so high, so it became basically visible to everybody. Meaning not just the people that were there, but you're talking about, I know, our makeshift computation had it, you know, going extraordinarily high into the air, but the point being is that it was visible to the inhabited world. The Navi says it, that fifth parak of Yoshua, the world, the inhabited world saw this huge column of water, and they were terrified. And even Rachav said to the messengers of Yoshua, "Kishamanu asher avisha shemes me yamsof." Now, this part of the Gemara is a little bit tricky because Rachav wasn't making reference to the crossing of the Yarden. In fact, the incident with Rachav took place in the second parak of Yoshua. The crossing of the Yarden took place in the third parak of Yoshua. And in fact, I mean, we just read the pasuk. She's clearly making reference to Kriyas Yamsuf. So it's the insertion over here of Rachav and her reaction seems a little bit misplaced, because the theme over here is the reaction to the crossing of the Yarden, not the crossing of Yamsuf. Okay, a little bit difficult. Okay, I guess the basic idea is that when people hear/see either one, crossing of Yamsuf or crossing of the Yarden, people are going to be terrorized. Okay, Odambi Yarden. This is now, we're continuing. We're still, same Tosefta. Eighth parak of the Tosefta. Adambi Yarden, Amalam Yoshua, De'u Amma Atem Ovrimas Yarden. Now, as they're crossing the Yarden, so Yoshua takes a moment in time to inspire. Inspire, okay, maybe inspire is not the best word, but you'll see what I mean. Ovrimas Yarden, Amenash Tarishu Es Yoshua Aret, Mimnechem. Understand that we are going in here with a purpose. Our mission is to drive out the inhabitants of the land. Shenemar v'arashem is called Yoshua Aretz Mibnechem. Im atem osim kein mutav. Now, if you do that, that's great. V'im lav b'imayim v'shotfim osichem. But if you don't, the water is going to come and the water is going to drown us. Now, okay. In other words, words of inspiration / focus, goal-oriented mission. My osichem, that last word in that pasuk was a little bit strange. Osichem, osi ve'eschem, me and you. Meaning Yeshua says, I'm your leader, I'm with you. In other words, if we drive out the inhabitants, that's great, mission accomplished. But if we don't drive out the inhabitants, I'm not only you going down, I'm going down as well. Meaning we're all in this together. They're still in the Jordan River, and Yoshua's instructions is to the Jewish people, take a stone and put it on your shoulder. The Mispar Shiftei Yisrael, corresponding to the number of tribes that are in the Jewish people. Uksiv, and why would we do that? Lamanti Yezos. Oath bekir bechem, ki shalom b'nechem achal lemor. And this is going to be a sign for the future generations. Your children are going to ask you, ma havanim ha'ela lechem. What are these stones? Simon levanim she'avru avos es yarden. Okay, we have an expression that's very popularized by the Ramban. Maisa avosim labanim. So here we're going to popularize a new expression. I don't know about that, but maisa avanim simon labanim. The stones. The stones themselves are going to be a simon. Now we cross over the Jordan River. Odam b'yarden amalem Yeshua, and they're still in the river. And Yeshua says to them, "Sulachem mizem mitoch yarden mimatzav raglei ha'kohanim." From where the kohanim are currently standing, meaning they're standing now at the on the bed of the river. But again, there's no water right now because they stopped up the water. Take the stones directly from there, from the foot of the from the feet of the kohanim. Hachin shem esrei avanim. Take 12 stones. Ve'avartem osam imachem, and take them along with you. Ve'hinachtem osam b'malon, and put them in the hotel. Asher talinu bo halayla, that we're staying tonight. Yalchu b'chol malon malon. Now, as a half, I mean, I might have thought that they're going to carry the stones wherever we go. Tamalama asher talinu bo halayla. No, the Navi says very clearly, only where we're staying tonight. And those stones are going to be a siman of the crossing of the Yarden. Amar v'Yehuda Abba Chalafta v'Rabbi Elazar ben Masi v'Chananya ben Chachinai. Amdu al osa avanim vishiarum kol achas va'achas. So they investigated the stones, they measured the stones, and shikula ka'arba'im sa'ah. And the stones were 40 sa'ah. Now 40 sa'ah is a volume. It's right. It's not a weight, right? It's a volume corresponding exactly. It's a volume corresponding to what a kosher mikvah would look like, and those are the size of the stones. It is very hard just to imagine, to envision, right, that one person can carry such a stone. Okay, admittedly, but the Gemara says it was Arbaim Sa Ugemiri. Now we have the following tradition: Diteini demadli inish lekadfe tosa diteune. Have. Generally speaking, here's a tradition that we have. You can carry a lot on your shoulder. Now, if somebody else picks it up and puts it on your shoulder, so you can bear tremendous burden, much more than if you were to pick it up and put it yourself on your own shoulder. Meaning, for you to physically exert, picking the item up from the ground, putting it on your shoulder, so you can do, let's say, X amount, but you could do 3X if somebody else were to put it on your shoulder. That's a tradition that we have. So here now, let's do the math. Okay, simple algebra. So here now, if we have each person picking up a stone and taking a 40 a stone and putting it on their own shoulder, so that means that had they been loaded by somebody else, so if X is equal to 40, 3X is going to be 120. So that means that if somebody were to load it on your shoulder, you'd be able to carry as much as 120 sa'ah. Mikan ata mechashev l'eshkol. And the Gemara says that now with this simple formula of X to 3X, so now we can go and figure out how large was the cluster of grapes. We're going to now move historically to a different time, notably the Meraglim. So we're going back about 39 years in history from what we're describing right now. And 39 years earlier, so we had the Meraglim going into Eretz Yisrael, and they came back with the fruit of the land. Now, this will allow the Gemara to segue into a lengthy discussion of the Meraglim. In fact, we're going to start it right about now, the discussion of the Meraglim, and then eventually we're going to return back to the Tosefta describing the Yarden. So just in terms of structure, we are started a long Tosefta describing the crossing of the Yarden. So the Tosefta started on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, where basically where we started this morning, right, Tanu Rabban and Ketzad Avru. It continued all the way through Lamed Aleph and Aleph to where we are now in the Gemara, and because we gave this formula of you can carry X if you pick it up yourself, 3X if you can load it by somebody else. So now the Gemara is going to segue into a discussion of the Meraglim. How big was that cluster of grapes that the Meraglim took? So first of all, we took the cluster of grapes and we carried on poles, meaning we ourselves did not, we didn't pick up the grapes themselves, but they were carried on poles. Now, if it's set a pole, then we know two people per pole. So ma tamalama bishnayim bishnei motos. So it comes out that there are actually two poles. Amar Rav Yitzchak tortani v'tortani de tortani. Actually, it comes out to a total of four poles where there were eight people carrying each end of the pole. Rashi spends a considerable amount of time describing the actual formation of these poles carrying the cluster of grapes. See Rashi for more details in terms of how the poles actually looked. He has a picture. Okay.
Good. This is parallel.
Okay, right, a lot of hypotenuses in that picture. So haketzad shmona nasu eshkol echad. So eight of, now we know there are a total 12 meraglim. So this math is going to be easy. So of the 12, eight carried the grapes. Echad nasa rimon. One of them carried a pomegranate. Echad nasa teina. One of them carried a fig. And Yoshua v'Kalev lo nasu klum. And Yoshua and Kalev, that only got us to 10. What about the last two? Yoshua and Kalev, and as you probably would guess, they separated themselves from the Meraglim. They carried nothing. Why did they carry nothing? Gemara gives two explanations. He bites them and mishum de chashive. So number one says the Gemara, because of their chashivas, so they just knew it was beneath them to carry. Or ibaisema shalayubo so eitza. Or because, right, they were just not part of the whole plan of deceiving the Jewish people and trying to convince them of not going into Eretz Yisrael. By the way, how big were the grapes? Meaning, now that we know the formula. So the grapes were how big? So once again, let's just go over what we know. If a person can lift and carry a 40 sa'ah, 40 saw measurement, and so that means then that you multiply that by 3, so that means that you, if loaded, you can carry 120. We're going to assume that the poles are basically tantamount to being loaded, so it's 120 times 8, meaning 8 people were carrying the grapes, and the assumption is that the grapes were loaded on them. So 120 times 8, 960. So 960 saw were the size of the grapes that were coming in from Eretz Yisrael. Okay. That would win in any county fair. Okay. So Pligi bar Rabbi Ami Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha. Okay. Now, just for a moment, we're going to come back to the crossing of the Yarden, and then we're going to go back to the Meraglim. Pligi bar Rabbi Ami Rabbi Yitzhak Nafcha Chanam al Diver Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, now remember, according to Rabbi Yehuda, how high was the was the column of water, so it went up 12 mil. So kichan yasam avru. So that means that when crossing, they traveled like they encamped. And we described this earlier, but the Gemara just spells it out. That you gotta argue, although we'll see in just a moment, you don't gotta, but it would seem presumably the most logical position that because the water went up 12 mil, so therefore the assumption is that it corresponded to the total length of the Jewish people in encampment formation, which was 12 mil. The Divrei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon b'zeachar ze'avru. And according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, now remember, now he said it went up, the column of water went up 300 mil into the air. Or, to use a less sophisticated terminology, very high. So according to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, so how did they cross? Ze'achar ze'. Meaning they didn't travel in encampment formation, but rather a single file, if you will. So that's one opinion. And if echad amar, no, bein mar kichani asanavru, mar savar adam kalim, mar savar mayim kalim. And the other position says, no, you don't have to say that. You could say that according to both opinions, they went in encampment formation, which means that from end to end, the total linear measurement of the Jewish people when crossing the Yarden was only 12 mil. So why are we having a debate in terms of how high the column went? So then it's just a function of rate. How fast are the people walking? How fast is the water flowing? And the Gemara says that could be the whole machlokas between the two positions. Okay. Now, we are going to come back and discuss more about the crossing of the Yarden when going to Eretz Yisrael. But from this point until the end of today's daf, we digress to the Meraglim. So the Gemara now is going to continue its digression about speaking of the Meraglim. Much of what we are going to be doing right now in the Gemara should sound familiar to all of us, because Rashi and Chumash brings down a lot of these drashas. Shalach lecha an Hashem. We are four lines down on Lamed Aleph and Beis. The Torah describes Shalach lecha an Hashem. Am Reish Lakish Shalach lecha midatcha. Reish Lakish says that the correct way to understand it is this is your idea. This is for you. A person chooses a bad portion for himself. So Rashi explains. How did this come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have issued an order to send the Meraglim only so that it would end in devastation? So in other words, Reish Lakish basically works backwards. Since we know it ends bad, it must be that the origination of this whole idea cannot come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but rather this was all. Now, who exactly? That part is not perfectly clear. Right, Moshe or the Jewish people? Behind the Yichsiv, let the Gemara weigh in on this issue. Vayita be'inai hadavar. So Amr Shlakish be'inai v'lo be'inav shalmakom. Meaning be'inai, meaning in my eyes. Meaning sounds like from the Gemara Moshe. Meaning this was Moshe's idea. But again, you could still argue this is Moshe's idea to appease and to capitulate to the Jewish people, or this was actually just Moshe's idea. Anyway, but according to Reish Lakish, however, you can't pin this one on Hashem. Meaning this did not emanate from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Vayach b'ulanu es ha'aretz, and we're going to go toward the land. Amar Rabbi Chaya bar Abba, meraglim lo eskavnu el levushta shel Eretz Yisrael. The word vayachbru, which means to scout, to land, to tour, but also encrypted in there, and this was the Meraglim's intent, was to find the embarrassment of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Ksiv hachva yichbru lanu sartu ksiv hasam. Gemara quotes a pasuk from Yeshayahu vechafra levana ubusha chama, describing an embarrassment of the moon, the embarrassment of the sun. So, and also, it's not exactly the same word, but cherpa. Meaning cherpa means embarrassment. I understand. I'm. You know, the words being the letters being shifted, but same basic idea. We have the following tradition handed down from generation to generation. Meraglim al shem asim nikru. The names that are given to the meraglim may not be their proper names, but simply ways of describing them based on their actions. Now we have that as a tradition, but to be honest, he admits, we are really only able to interpret one of the names. Sisur ben Michael. And he explains, what is the name Sisur ben Michael? Sisur shesaser ma'asav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He hides the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, Soter. He denies, he contradicts the actions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu intend the land to be good, and he rejects that idea. It's not going to be good. Michael she'asa atzmo mach. He makes himself. Now, himself over here is a euphemism. And it's not a reference to himself. It's a reference to Kadosh Baruch Hu. But the Gemara just doesn't want to say it that way. He makes a Kadosh Baruch Hu as if he were low. Meaning, puts himself above a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Am Rav Yochanan afanu ne'amar. Rav Yochanan says, I could do one more. Meaning, obviously, there are 12 meraglim in total. But, and again, the Masorah that we have is that each one of the names corresponds to not their actual name, but a description of their intent and their action. So I could do one more. Nachmi ben Vafsi, he says, what is that translated into? Nachmi sheichmi devar shal Kadosh Baruch Hu. He hides the words of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And Vafsi shepisa amidosav, he steps over the actions of Kadosh, I'm sorry, amidosav shal Kadosh Baruch Hu, steps over the actions of the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Vayalu banegev vayavo ad Chavron. So they go in the south and they get to Chavron. Now, grammatically, in English, you don't hear this. In Hebrew, you hear this loud and clear. It should say vayavo, because we're describing the 12 meraglim. And it doesn't say that. It says vayavo ad Chevron. So vayavo mi ba'ilei. The Gemara notes that. It should say vayavo. Amaravam lami shepirish kalev miatzas meraglim. V'halach v'nishatech al kevri avos. So what Kalev did is Kalev took a detour. He went to Chevron because he's now going to go to Maras HaMachmela. And he's going to daven by the avos. Amalem avasei b'kshu alai rachamim she'en natzel miatzas meraglim. And basically petitions the avos that he does not succumb to peer pressure. Yoshua kvar bikesh Moshe alav rachamim. Now, as far as Yoshua is concerned, so he already got a special layer, a level of protection from Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenema vikra Moshe la Hoshea ben Nun Yehoshua ka Yoshiacha meatzas meraglim. Okay, so given his name was Hoshea, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe gave him the additional yud. It's a tefillah, it's a petition that he be saved from the atzas meraglim. Behind the dechsev avdi Kalev ekev haisa ruach acheres imo, and Kalev had ruach acheres. He had another ruach, meaning that Yoshua was given special protection from Moshe. So he was kind of, you know, he was already insulated to be protected from the Meraglim. As far as Kalev is concerned, that he did on his own. Meaning Kalev was the one who gave himself the protection. Some of the larger questions, which I certainly don't have answers to. Meaning, if Moshe knows that this is all going to go bad, and he's giving... I know. Right, so, and Moshe is giving now a special installation to Yahushua, knowing that all this is going to go bad, so then why are you sending them? Okay. Some of those larger issues, you know, are the details I can explain really well. The larger issues are always more challenging. Okay, Visham Achiman Sheshai V'Tamai. Okay, let's just do a little bit more for this morning. Okay, the giants. So Achiman Miyuman Shebechav. Achiman, again, the assumption always is that names are not just proper names, but also descriptions as well, adjectives. So Achiman Miyuman Shebechav, he was special. Right, he had a special height, so special strength. Right, just like no offense to you lefties out there, but just like the right hand has a special dominance. So miyuman from the word yamin. So that's Achiman. Shisha shemaisim es ha'aretz ke shechatot. As far as Shisha is concerned, so he makes the land like shechatot, meaning every time he puts his foot in the ground, he makes a depression in the ground. You know, like those dinosaur tracks that they keep uncovering. So that was the description of Shisha. And finally, Tamai shemaisim es ha'aretz talamim talamim. And Tamai, because when he walks, he creates furrows in the ground. Okay. Davi Acher, Achiman bana Anat, Shishai bana Alash, Tamai bana Talbush. Okay, they are also could be named after cities that they constructed. And finally, Yilidei HaAnak, Shemaanikim Chamabim Kaman. And they were the children of Anak. And Anak, because when he stood up tall in the sky, so it was Ki'ilu, he was wearing the necklace, the sun as a necklace, meaning he was that tall. There was a perception that the sun basically served him as a necklace. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we pick it up. There's more about the Meraglim. They're going to go through more drushas about the Meraglim for a good part of tomorrow. And then we're going to come back to the crossing of the Yarden.